Next step, number 753, Playing Against the Odds, November 10th, 2022.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to a 15th season of the Next Step podcast with Father Vazgen. With these podcasts, Father Vazgen provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte. Those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. We make these podcasts available every week free of charge. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Unashamedly, I will talk about it. Yes, unashamedly. I'm going to talk about odds, about gambling, unashamedly, because I've got the surefire method to winning, okay? No, I'm not talking about the lotto. That's, you know, did you hear about $2 billion? Well, you may not have realized the place where the ticket was sold, the $2 billion, the largest jackpot ever in lotto history. It was just down the street from me in a small little area called Altadena. I live in Pasadena, so Altadena. Interesting, because the night before I needed gas, I thought to myself, wow, I could have stopped by and bought gas there and maybe got the winning ticket too. And then I realized, no, I probably don't even know where that gas station is. No one has stopped and bought that ticket, because you know the odds of winning the lottery are the same whether you play or not. Right. I'm talking about the odds, okay? I know it takes one person. All you need is one ticket and you can win. And believe it or not, this is what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the odds, but not about the lottery, about something that is just beyond belief. Okay. So bear with me for a few minutes, but I want to explain what that means. The odds are the same in the lottery because there's something like 289 million combinations. Okay, so your chances of winning are 1 in 289 million, which is basically the same as if you didn't play. So that's what they mean when they say your odds are the same whether you play or not. But obviously, all you need is that one ticket. Now, bear with me. This is what I'm going to talk about, because I'm going to share with you a story about the one ticket. No, no, no. I got something even better than the guy who won the $2 billion. Yes. You're not going to believe it, because I just returned from Nashville, Tennessee, okay? And, you know, the gambling mecca of the world, arguably, I know that there's still the old world and everything, but here in the United States, the gambling mecca of the world is Las Vegas. And they came out a few years ago with this PR campaign saying what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. In other words, you can get away with anything. I think you can do anything you want in Vegas except kill somebody. I think aside from murdering somebody, you could everything else is legal, from what I understand, okay? But anyway, they had this motto or this advertising campaign, you know, like anything goes over there. What you do in Vegas stays in Vegas. And what I'm going to tell you today is what I did in Nashville shouldn't stay in Nashville. Okay, remember that. It's all along the same metaphors, using the gambling metaphors. We're going to talk about the odds. Because we just returned. Susan and I went to Nashville, and we were there with a dear friend, Ceza, who's also part of our ministry. And we baptized her grandson. And I was very fortunate because when we were going to baptize the grandson, the Vicar General of the Eastern Diocese. So here in America, we are divided along geography. So the Eastern Diocese was the first original diocese here in the United States. And then in 1927, when the population and the geography of the population shifted, they went more towards the West. The Western Diocese consisting of 13 states, if I remember right. But now it goes all the way down to Mexico. And of course, there's communities in Hawaii and Alaska. As you know, a few years ago, we went out to Hawaii even and celebrated over there as well. So based on the geography and there are two dioceses, the Eastern and the Western, and Nashville was part of the Eastern Diocese. So the Vicar General calls me up. We hear you're going to be doing a baptism. Would you celebrate the Divine Liturgy as well? And of course, yes, I was honored. So we got there and we had a chance to not only celebrate this baptism, the sacrament, but also celebrate the Divine Liturgy. You know, I kind of just for a moment just say this is kind of bizarre too. This is not the first time this has happened. You know, like I will do the services, the Armenian Divine Liturgy in places. So I've told a couple people since I've returned that I just got back from Nashville, celebrated the liturgy. Oh, are there Armenians there? I mean, like, wait a minute. I'm an Armenian priest, and I'm going to Nashville to celebrate the Divine Liturgy just because I want to do it. I mean, it's just kind of bizarre when they ask me things. Anyway, yes, there is an Armenian community there, and I celebrated the Divine Liturgy. I also did the baptism, and it was just beautiful. I met a lot of people from different areas. Nashville is an up-and-coming small little community. It's what we refer to as a mission parish. We celebrated in the local Episcopal Church that was graciously offered their facility, their church, for use by the Armenian community there. I met people from Armenia, from Baku, from Iran, from Istanbul and Beirut, and of course from America. In fact, I met a family from Pasadena, just down the street from us. And they had moved out there. So just a delightful, delightful community. So what am I going to talk about the odds with you? Well, here's the interesting thing, okay? We celebrated the Divine Liturgy right after the baptism. So traditionally, the way a baptism used to be in the old days, not now, it's like a separate event, but what it would be part of the Divine Liturgy. In other words, there's a communion. In the Armenian rite of baptism, in the sacrament, there are three sacraments that you receive on the day of your baptism in the Armenian rite. You are baptized, that's one sacrament. You are confirmed with the Holy Chrism, chrismated, okay? And you receive your first communion. So Magurduchun is the baptism, Troshum or Gankum, Ganink. As a lot of times people refer to the baptism as Ganunk, okay? The Ganunk is in reference to the anointing with the Holy Miron, a separate sacrament. And the third sacrament is receiving the Holy Communion, the Holy Body and Blood of Jesus Christ. So a lot of times in the olden times, they would celebrate the baptism followed by the Divine Liturgy, at which point the newly baptized person would receive his or her first communion with the community. Because you see, that's the whole purpose of baptism. Purpose of baptism is to bring in this new child into the community of worshipers, the community of believers, the community that has assembled around the common understanding that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son for the salvation of the world. That's the community you're joining at the time of baptism. So I did the baptism, just beautiful. As the kid's name is Samvel. And we baptized him with the Godfather and Godmother and promising faith, hope, and love. Then we went right into the Divine Liturgy, and it was just beautiful. There was a small little choir there. A couple people sang. Instead of organ, they played the piano, which was beautiful. And we had a deacon who assisted me at the celebration of the Holy Eucharist. And there was time for me to give the sermon. And as I'm giving the sermon, this is when the whole odds issue came in my head. The odds. Like, what are the odds This is a question, okay? This is not just about Las Vegas. It's not about the lottery. It's about real world odds. 100 years ago, and I use this basically in my sermon too on Sunday. 100 years ago, it did 107 years to be exact, somebody got up and said that there would be one Armenian left. And this somebody happened to be part of the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Ottoman Empire, who wanted to annihilate all the Armenians. And he said there would be one Armenian left, and that Armenian would be in a museum. In other words, basically get rid of all the Armenians, and then we will have one that is sitting in a museum. So at some point in the future, we could look at him and say, you know, that is what we used to call an Armenian. They're extinct. They're no more. They're no longer there. In other words, their plan was to annihilate all Armenians. No Armenian was to be left except for this one. Obviously, I guess it's an anti-poetic. It's an ugly poetry, but you get the idea, right? They weren't going to construct any museum. He was just making the point that we're going to be annihilating you, right? And now here. Here's the incredible thing. Here we are, over 100 years later, assembled in a church in a place called Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville, Tennessee. I mean, hey, do you know where that is? The Country Music Awards were awarded last night in Nashville, Tennessee. Okay? Country music. In a place called Nashville, Tennessee, a group of Armenians were going to assemble 100 years later, after that statement is made, that there would be only one Armenian, and that Armenian would be in a museum. So 100 years later, what are the odds? What are the odds? They are more. They are. It's ridiculous when you think about it, right? I mean, we sat there and we looked at the lottery and we said, wow, those are incredible odds that somebody won $2 billion. This is even beyond that, okay? What are the odds 100 years after that statement is made that a group of Armenians would assemble in a place called Nashville, Tennessee, on the other side of the earth from where they started, on the other side of the earth from Armenia, and they would be singing their Armenian hymns of worship, of praise, that they would be singing and celebrating their divine liturgy in the language of their people, which they have done for the last 2,000 years. What are the odds that they would be reading from the Holy Gospels with the language that was given to them by Mesrob Mashtots through divine intervention, that has been given and has been the language of prayer and sanctity for centuries? What are the odds that a new child would be baptized in this church? In other words, not only is the church functioning, but it is producing its new generation and putting the holy chrism, the holy muron, on that child's forehead and baptizing that child in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. What are the odds? What are the odds that that could even be a possibility? Do you agree that that's like even bigger? Those are worse odds than the lottery, right? How could that be? When there's not 1.5 million people. 1.5 million people perished. The others were thrown out into the desert. Thrown out in what we would call today the diaspora. The diaspora was created. What are the odds? And all of a sudden, 100 years later, God finds a way to do what is possible when everyone said it's impossible. God finds a way of winning when everyone says the odds of losing are far, far much greater. And there we are in the middle of Nashville, baptizing a young child into the church, There we are in Nashville, Tennessee, singing the praise of God in a language that was supposed to be all done, with a group of people from all corners of the earth saying that, yes, we are still alive. Now, do you want me to say it? Shall we say it? Yeah, in your face, Turkey, right? We're alive. I mean, think about it. We are just flabbergasted that somebody won the lottery. $2 billion at an odds of 1 in 280 million to 1, okay? And what were the odds that 100 years after a genocide, a group of people would celebrate life, defy the odds, and come out as winners? What are the odds? Celebrating that allows you to look only in one direction. And that's the direction of resurrection. Jesus said, I have conquered this world, and you too can. And so that day, in the middle of Nashville, Tennessee, we not only celebrated the divine liturgy, but the intent of what that divine liturgy is all about. Namely, we celebrated life, the resurrection, the hope, and the miracle. The miracle. Not with thunderbolts and lightning, but the miracle that came to us in the form of a small baby 2,000 years ago in the form of Jesus Christ, and today in the form of this new child who was baptized into the church, into the living body of Jesus Christ. Now, you can imagine how they are celebrating at the house of the guy who won the lottery. Tell me, how much more should we be celebrating when we've got worse odds and have won a bigger prize, such as life, such as resurrection? Let me leave you with that thought as we go to the song of the day today. Always, we give you a chance to kind of digest what's been said. We'll be back to continue after today's selection.
when Jesus wore.
Oh, happy day, Edwin Hawkins. It is a happy day, right? When Jesus washed your sins away. What are the odds? What are the odds? That's what we're talking about today. What are the odds? Well, we know the odds in a lotto, but what are the odds that 100 years after someone wants you dead, that your descendants are still alive and producing the next generation? Tell me, is that like the ultimate happiness that you should have? Well, no, the ultimate is this: when Jesus washed my sins away. What are the odds of getting a brand new start on life? That's what this song celebrates. And that's the celebration. You know, we got a chance to be part of that celebration, got a dream come true. We sang with a gospel choir while we were in Nashville. We visited the African American Music Museum. Wow, this is someplace you've got to go. In fact, it's worth making a trip to Nashville just for this. This museum, my only regret was we didn't have enough time to go through the entire place. So much to learn, so much to appreciate. It made me realize that, you know, these were our roots that we kind of abandoned. By that, what I mean is several years ago, I started this program of bringing together the Armenian suffering in the context of the Black suffering, of the African-American suffering here in this country. And I'll share some more with you in the second portion of today's show, because it is a theme that for the last couple of years, unfortunately, we've had our hands filled with the pandemic going on, with what's going on in Armenia, in Artsakh, that this theme sort of we put on a back burner, and I want to refocus on it. So I, in a sense, just, oh, happy day that we were able to do this, this trip. It gave us a chance to listen to some incredible music at the museum and participate in a gospel choir. And not only that, inside this museum, there was a small little recording studio that you walked into, and there in a video presentation, the gospel choir was there. And this is like my dream. So I wasn't gonna lose this opportunity. So we went in there, says Susan and myself, and we recorded Oh Happy Day with this gospel choir. And we sang it, and there was a small little recording that they sent home with us too. And anytime I get down now, I just watch that little recording. It brings me up, as it should, as gospel music should, as the gospel of Jesus Christ. What are the odds that your sins are forgiven? Well, on a normal scale, you'd say it's beyond the lottery. But what's impossible for us is very possible for God. And that's something that we need to celebrate. We always forget. You know, if you listen, when we talk about the divine liturgy, this is a very important that you refer to it as we celebrated the divine liturgy. You don't perform it. You don't do a divine liturgy. You celebrate the divine liturgy, the divine act of God forgiving us, of God saving us, the salvific act of the crucifixion and the resurrection. There it is. It's something that should be celebrated. I see things that come to us from different. In fact, just the other day, I got this email from a bunch of priests who were doing this prayer service. Join us for a prayer service. And it's like a Zoom page, imagine, with all these priests' faces on it. And you look at them. God forgive me for saying this. Jeez, like somebody should clue them that we need to smile during these pictures. They're taking a picture of you. Smile a little bit. Hey, you think that You think that serving God is like such a depressing thing. No wonder people don't want to follow you. Smile. This is a beautiful thing. God so loved this world that he gave his only begotten. That's something to celebrate. Oh, happy day when Jesus washed our sins away. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's song. We're going to continue right now. I will have a link on today's show notes to the song as well as all kinds of good music. Get into some gospel music. And I'll have a link also to the museum. I highly recommend it. Back to our show. We are back and celebrating goodness, celebrating victory, celebrating resurrection. That's what the theme is today. Basically, beating the odds. What are the odds that after that horrific, horrific crucifixion on Friday, that Jesus would be back to life? Impossible odds, and yet possible. Because Jesus Christ, God incarnate, makes it possible. Martin Luther King Jr., one of the most beautiful quotes that I love remembering, so much to learn from him. But one of the quotes that I always am reminded of, especially because we as Armenians are such a small minority. You know, there's minorities, but when you get down to the smallest of the smallest, that's Armenians, okay? And what does Martin Luther King say? When if God is with you, any minority is all of a sudden a majority. If God's with you, you're automatically a majority. Think about that. Think about the power in that statement. And going to Nashville, it was kind of an interesting wake up for me, because several years ago we had made these connections with the African American community. I've written extensively. There's so much of our podcasts. If you go on epostle.net, one of the great things now is that we've got this archive, an archive of the next steps, an archive of all of the videos that we've made, the sound files that we made, and soon the sermons are going to be up there too. Every day there's something new coming up. But one of the interesting connections that we made early on was when we first started In His Shoes, was that how do we define ourselves? That definition came from our past. And if you look at the mission statement, what we've written, the In His Shoes movement was about walking in the shoes of others. Why? Because at one point we were without shoes. But we were the people that needed help. Today, we are people that can help others. So can we walk in the shoes of others? We often complain when others don't walk in our shoes, like, do you know what it's like to be an Armenian? We cannot complain unless we're willing to walk in the shoes of others. And part of that definition that we came up with was based on who we were as a suffering community. And one of the things that I was so adamant about saying is that I guess it was a reaction to what I was seeing. We kept on being compared with the Jewish community. Why? Because we've gone through a genocide, Holocaust. They went through Holocaust. We went through genocide. And so forever, people were comparing us with the Jewish community. And I said, you know, with all due respect, excuse me, I don't want to split hairs. You know, all pain is pain. All pain is suffering, and the pain and suffering and the magnitude of genocide is a truly unique suffering, a different. It's not that other suffering is not authentic. It's just that the uniqueness of genocide warrants that we talk about it at a different level. And so that took me to the rallies in Darfur. It took me to Rwanda, to study, to get closer and closer to the people. And finally, it occurred to me that we have the greatest example right in our midst, right here in America, and that's with the African-American community. and the suffering that they have endured. And I started listening to gospel music. I started listening to Dr. King, because in Dr. King, there was a unique opportunity to bring not only the suffering together, but do it within a Christian context. Ding, ding, ding. Do we get it now? What are we? The first Christian nation? So how can you talk about that suffering without connecting it to the crucifixion, without connecting it to the sufferings of others and the power of Jesus Christ to overcome these sufferings? And in Dr. King, I found an ally. And so much of what we've come to learn and what we've come to experiment with in the In Issues movement, as well as what we talk about in Armadoxy, is a combination, it's a melding, it's a fusion of these different ideas. And we have so much to learn from the African-American community. And going out to Nashville, being part of this music scene, I realized that music is there. Now, that music is a testament to their suffering. You listen to the blues, you listen to the early gospel music. And several years ago, I would have to say about 30 years ago, I was interviewed on a radio station up in Northern California. For the life of me, I cannot remember the call numbers on that, but I do remember it was somewhere in Los Altos. And that's where the studio was. And I was recorded, and it was around April 24th. And I dared to say that, you know, for the Armenian people, the suffering following the genocide is reflected in our music. And I shared with them some of the pieces, for instance, Dele Yaman, for instance, some of the more traditional songs that we have. And you hear basically the Armenian blues. If you listen to somebody playing a taksim, a song on the oud, you listen to the beauty of the clarinet whining, duduk, and you just go and you are lost in those melodies. And this is what music can do and should do. And these are the Armenian blues, so to speak, in the suffering of our people. Right after the genocide, it is truly amazing that they come to America. And there is a CD out. I will put it on today's show notes. It's called Eighth Street Armenians. And it's about that generation after the genocide and how they got together on 8th Street and 8th Avenue. It's something like that. I'll get the name and put it, but look for it on the show notes. And if you can get the actual CD, the liner notes are worth reading. And there's a whole experience of the first generation of Armenians that came to America and what they experienced. Their need to assimilate, but at the same time preserve what they had. Today, we talk very, very big about, you know, we don't want to assimilate. For some people, there was no choice. It was a matter of, are you going to provide for your family or not? And so we know within the Armenian community, especially here in California, a lot of people drop the IAN, the YAN at the end of their name, and anglicized it. For instance, Petrosyan became Peterson or Peters. Anglicizing it, why? Because we don't want to be Armenian? No, because you couldn't get jobs. You couldn't provide for your family. And so there's a whole story that has to be told. Not much different from what the African Americans went through. The discrimination that they went through and still go through. And quite different than the Armenians, who can hide behind the color of their skin and say, well, we don't qualify, but you can't hide from what's inside of you. That color of the skin may be a temporary fix, but deep down you are different. You come with a different baggage. And should that baggage prevent you from living, from aspiring to the same things that others want to aspire? Certainly not. That's the beauty of the United States of America. That's the beauty of this democracy. That's the beauty of what it says in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator. That's right. The creator is mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. And we have as these unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, does that mean that we are able to do that? Well, no, there's been a lot of things that hinder us from doing that. Most obviously, because of people's racial makeup, they have had to submit. They have been oppressed. I got to tell you, we went to Andrew Jackson's plantation, or what is called as the Hermitage in Nashville. It was beautiful. But there is something that is unescapable. And that's the eeriness, the creepiness, to put it bluntly, of the slave quarters. You go into those slave quarters. I think, if I remember right, 180 slaves were kept by Andrew Jackson, former, I think, 7th president of the United States. They called him the people's president. He was so accessible. And you go and you look at this beautiful area, but still the creepiness, the eeriness of walking through those slave quarters. And you realize what kind of horror these people went through. And so that struggle to find that freedom, that struggle to be free, is part of the human condition. We're always struggling for that freedom. And it's almost defined by that. Tomorrow here in the United States, let's see, November 11th, tomorrow is going to be celebrated as Veterans Day, and we honor the veterans. And who are those veterans? These are people who have said that we'll pay the ultimate price for that freedom. And so because they do, we honor these people, the ultimate price of laying even down their lives. And so there is, on that freedom, it is so precious that it has a value that is not measured by traditional means, but is measured by human life. And that's what we celebrate. All this being said now, I want you to come back to where we're at right now. It's the celebration. And that's what we're celebrating. When we talk about apostolic evangelism, what does that mean? Well, what did the apostles evangelize? They evangelized the odds, that it was impossible. What we saw on Friday, it was impossible for that person who was on that cross, who was beaten and had nails driven through his hands and his feet, that was whipped and put a crown of thorns, and he suffocated up at that cross with the blood dripping down of him. It was impossible. It was beyond the odds. Okay? That's what it was. Okay? So it was like, it was so impossible that anybody would give you money on this. I hate to put it bluntly, but that's what it is, okay? So you saw Jesus up on the cross. You saw him bleed. You saw him beaten. You saw the life taken out of him. You saw him suffocate, take his last breath. And after such a horrid, horrid death, it's impossible for him to come back. So I will give you the odds. I'll give you like a 280 million to one. So you put up $1, and the odds are, if you win, if he comes back to life, I'll give you $289 million. Okay, that's the odds. That's what an odd means, the odds, okay? After 1.5 million people are just extinguished, exterminated, killed, murdered in the deserts, piles of bones and people dying. What are the odds that 100 years later, one of their descendants is going to be creating a new generation of these people? Impossible. So I will give you the odds. I will say, yeah, you put down $1 and I'll give you $289 million if that person is living. What are the odds? That's what we're talking about today. And that is something to celebrate. When we talk about apostolic evangelism, that's what they were evangelizing. That's what the apostles were talking about. Against the odds, Jesus lives. Against the odds, there is resurrection. And you know what? The African-American community understood this through their gospel music. We understood it. We just don't get it today because we don't understand what's going on. We understood that. You listen to our shatagans, our hymns. We understand that. But we're not communicating that. And that's where that apostolic evangelism for an electronic world comes into play. That's what we're doing here. So celebrate. We beat the odds. Here's Susie with her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Hi, Susie here again, reminding you that the next step is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We invite you to check out our extensive archive about applied spirituality and Christianity for just about every life situation. Each episode is filled with insights about faith and applications of love. We're proud to have these podcasts available to our worldwide audience, with listeners added daily. To become a partner of this ministry, please consider donating by pressing on the donate button on our website. Your monetary contribution goes to maintain and further this dynamic mission, bringing the message of Armodoxy into the lives of a waiting world. Let us know if you'd like to sponsor a series of podcasts by dropping us a note at feedback@epostle.net. That's Epostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World, .net. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Okay, thank you, Susie. Now, you waited till the end, and this is your prize, okay? I'm going to put it all together. I'm going to put it all together. You're going to say, wow, this guy connects the dots. We're talking about odds. In the capital of odd making, in other words, the gambling capital of the world, Las Vegas, they paid millions of dollars to brand themselves as what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Basically, you can get away with anything except perhaps murder, anything in Vegas, and it'll stay in Vegas. And now my message to you, what happened in Nashville, let it not stay in Nashville. What happened in Nashville, don't let it stay there. The resurrection, what happened at Resurrection Sunday is something that happens every single day when we allow the grace of God to touch us and affect us. It's just a matter of looking out there and you see this incredible miracle. What happened there? Don't let it stay there. Well, we are talking about odds, and the odds that you would hear this message from Susie are pretty up there, right? You know that you're going to, it's like a one-to-one. You know Susie's going to make this announcement, and I thank her for it, and I thank all of you for all of your support, your prayers, your love, the beautiful messages that you send me. I really, truly appreciate it. We are new. Yeah, it's been only a couple months that we've been broadcasting on epostle.net. We've been doing this show for the last 15 years. It's been part of the In Issues ministry. It still is. We're the voice of In Issues. And of course, you'll be seeing more and more of us on social media in the coming weeks. Please do check out Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And we need your help in promoting this, in sharing this. I get people who come up to me and say, I don't do Instagram, I don't do Facebook. Yeah, that's good. I understand completely. There are times where I need to pull the plug too. But I'm going to ask you specifically, do it. Do it even if you don't go on Facebook. Create an account for the full sake of being able to share this. Create some friends and share this ministry with others. Share Epostle any way that you can, because it's in those numbers that, well, we are able to move forward. Those numbers mean a lot, and especially for a podcast. We've been doing this for 15 years. Now we've added to this daily messages. We've added all kinds of stuff. I invite you to explore epostle.net. That's apostle with an E, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. Don't forget that universe. We're all part of that universe, and it's where all the dots that need connecting exist, okay? It's expanding, so a little tougher to put the dots together, but we do it. Anyway, that brings an end to today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. We look forward to being with you throughout the week at epostle.net. Look for us, check out our messages, and drop us a line. Everything you send, we read. I want to do a quick shout out to all the friends, old and new, that we met in Nashville, congratulating them all on the new addition to our church community. And God bless all of those who sang and participated in a very meaningful liturgy. I hope we got that across in today's next step. On behalf of our producer, Susie, and myself, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take that next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.